Our first scripture reading is from Exodus. Moses came down from Mount Sinai. As he came down from the mountain with the two tablets of the covenant in his hand, Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because he had been talking with God. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, the skin of his face was shining, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them, and Aaron and all the leaders of the congregation returned to him, and Moses spoke with them. Afterward, all the Israelites came near, and he gave them in commandment all that the Lord had spoken with him on Mount Sinai. When Moses had finished speaking with them, he put a veil on his face. But whenever Moses went in before the Lord to speak with him, he would take the veil off until he came out. And when he came out and told the Israelites what he had been commanded, the Israelites would see the face of Moses, that the skin of his face was shining. And Moses would put the veil on his face again until he went in to speak with him. And then a reading from Luke. Now, about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up to the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly, they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make these three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent in those days and told no one any of the things that they had seen. May God bless our understanding of this reading.
My most recent favorite memory of hiking up a big mountain was last July when Elliot and I were visiting his family in western Maine. We woke up one morning and Elliot suggested that we go for a hike. I agreed, but since I was on vacation, I didn't want anything too intense. Knowing the area better than I do, Elliot decided on a trail nearby. We ate a quick breakfast and got on our way. But about 30 minutes or so into the hike, I realized that this mountain was much bigger than I had been led to believe, and I would not be relaxing by the lake anytime soon. I started to feel my quads burning and my stomach rumbling and was feeling pretty annoyed that the leisurely hike that I had imagined was actually a 2-hour hike up the steep side of Pleasant Mountain. Still grumbling to myself, after about an hour or so, I looked up from my hiking shoes to realize that we had reached a beautiful plateau that looked out upon the beauty of western Maine and New Hampshire. And before us was a ridge run full of bushes and bushes of blueberries, just ripe enough to eat. Not having packed any snacks with us, I rather dramatically started to grab as many handfuls of blueberries as I could along the trail. After a while, Elliot and I reached the peak and enjoyed the view for a while. It was such a beautiful day. And on our way back, as we were hiking back along that ridge run, along those many patches of ripe blueberries, rather suddenly before us was a deer, just probably from me to the fourth pew, was just casually sticking her face, eating those blueberries just as we had. We abruptly stopped in the awe and the beauty of that moment. Beauty of that creature who was seemingly enjoying the blueberries just as much as we had on our empty stomachs. The entire hike back down that mountain, although still physically challenging, was one of wonder for me. Instead of focusing on my bad knees or my sweaty back, all I could think about was that deer and the verse of Psalm 42 that ran over and over through my head, "As a deer longs for flowing streams, so my soul thirsts for you, O God." God showed up for us on that mountain in a way that was an unexpected grace. It was our own mini transfiguration. Both of our scriptures from this morning feature climbing and descending tall mountains and spiritual transformations. They feature God showing up in a bright and dazzling way and being with humanity through an intimate encounter. In our Old Testament reading, we hear about Moses' encounter with God on top of Mount Sinai. The story comes through a wider narrative of God making a covenant with the recently liberated Israelites. Think about Moses as their leader. He had many close moments with God on mountaintops. Think burning bush, Ten Commandments, etc. In this particular trip up Mount Sinai, as Moses descended, his face glowed. The people saw his face and knew that God was among them. Through Moses, a new relationship between Yahweh and the people of Israel had formed. No longer confined to the mountain, the Holy One had come to dwell down in the midst of God's people. In our gospel reading from today, I think is the culmination of mountaintop scenes in our scriptural canon. The transfiguration of Jesus. To transfigure something is for something to change in its appearance, to become more beautiful or elevated. What the disciples saw on top of that mountain with Jesus was nothing short of astonishing. Jesus, their beloved teacher, was transfigured. As the text says, while Jesus was praying, the appearance of his face changed and his clothes became dazzling white. Friedrich Buechner interprets what the disciples saw beautifully. He writes, "It was Jesus of Nazareth, all right, the man they tramped many a dusty mile with, whose mother and brothers they knew, the one they'd seen as hungry, tired, and footsore as the rest of them. But it was also the Messiah, the Christ, in his glory. It was the holiness of the man shining through his humanness, his face so afire with it they were almost blinded." Indeed, Jesus was a familiar part of the disciples' lives. This was the one that multiplied loaves and fishes to feed the crowds. This is the one that cured lepers and tamed the seas. This was the one who healed the blind and raised the dead. And this is the one who Peter, just a few verses before the story, identified as the Messiah. If we considered everything the disciples witnessed along the way, there must be more to the story than just Jesus' divinity clarified. So, how do we interpret this dazzling moment on top of this mountain? It was God reaching down, reaching out in an intimate way to a rather desensitized people. And as in so many of our gospel stories, the disciples are stand-ins for you and for me. They had become so accustomed to what was in front of them, the Jesus who healed people and who walked with them, that what was before them was foggy and unclear. They routinely just don't get it. The disciples kept missing how Jesus upended their expectations for a Messiah, and frankly, so often do we. Mercifully, our God comes to us in moments of transfiguration. God turns the lights on and makes clear what was foggy in the darkness. In this transfiguration story, God switches on the light for the disciples. To enliven their dulled senses, Jesus disrupts Peter, James, and John from their routine and takes them to a mountaintop apart from their everyday lives. The Creator makes Jesus resplendent and says, "This is my Son, my chosen. Listen to him." Celtic tradition talks about thin spaces, places where the divine is especially present, where only if momentarily the veil is lifted and heaven and earth meet. Thin places where there is a clear glimpse of clarity, of beauty, of the sacred. I imagine that the Transfiguration was one such thin place for Jesus's disciples, even if they were still left wondering how to wrap their heads around what they had witnessed. And perhaps Jesus experienced it this way too. Can you imagine what was going through their minds as they climbed down that mountain? Can you even imagine what was going through Moses' head as he climbed down Mount Sinai and his face was glowing? If we take the time to think about it, we've all had moments where we've experienced a thin place, a time when we've been radically reoriented or transformed, a place where we've felt the presence of God so poignantly, when we've had a momentary glimpse of awe or inspiration. Maybe it was at the death of a loved one, deathbed of a loved one, the birth of a small child, a gorgeous sunset, the unexpected kindness of a stranger. How do we often react to these moments? If we take the Transfiguration story as our guide, so often I think we are like Peter, who just isn't able to sit back, stay quiet, take it all in. Peter, whose reaction to the sight is to offer to build permanent structures for them all to live in so that it can stay in that moment forever. So often we want to box these moments up and make them permanent, or we even miss the moment entirely, or at least the meaning of it. In Luke's telling of it, the disciples managed to do all of this. And these moments are fleeting, aren't they? We'd probably all be better if we could just learn and hang out a bit in awe and wonder at the thin place that's right in front of us. As I hiked down that mountain last summer, I was momentarily jolted out of my grumbly ways. I had been given the gift of a thin place that reminded me of God's radically beautiful presence in our world. All the way up, I had been groaning about my unmet expectations and my hurting calves and my hardly empty stomach. But thankfully, our loving God still works with us and shows up for us again and again and again in unexpected and sometimes abrupt ways. As I close, I'll leave you with a quote from one of my favorite books, Marilynne Robinson's Gilead. John Ames, a congregational minister in Iowa, is at the deathbed of his oldest friend, Boughton. He reflects, "It has seemed to me that sometimes as though the Lord breathes on this poor gray ember of creation and turns to radiance for a moment or for a year or the span of a life. And then it sinks back into itself again, and to look at it, no one would know it had anything to do with fire or light. Wherever you turn your eyes, the world can shine like transfiguration. You don't have to bring a thing to it except a little willingness to see. Only who would have the courage to see it?" We may miss or misunderstand these transfigurations most of the time, but the story of our covenantal history with our God shows us that we serve a forgiving, loving, patient God who continually calls us to seek her in all that we do, just as both Moses and the disciples did. As we head into the Lenten season in a few weeks, let us climb down the mountain carrying with us the call of our persistent Creator to heal the sick, take care of the poor, love our neighbor, walking with Christ to his ultimate death and, yes, resurrection. Amen.